Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Warsham, and it's that time of the month. I've never said it that way. But Dr. J is here to flush out our vaginal walls.
How you doing, Justin?
I'm great. I'm so sorry for that introduction.
Listen, before we get started, What a Yankee Angels game last night, huh?
Well,
Did you watch that?
It's so funny. As the intro music was playing, I was realizing that we were just starting into the throes of baseball season. I know because I work at a radio station and we have a sports cluster, and I'm right next to the sports station is where my production office is now. And even though I am not a big baseball fan, but we are the station for the Los Angeles Dodgers. And I do This Day in Dodger History. I voice all that stuff for the station. So I was going to ask you, how is the baseball season going for? Because I know you're hardcore.
Yeah, well, the Yanks are in the midst of a 7-game winning streak. And they beat the Angels last night in the 10th inning. Yeah.
Wow.
Didi Gregorius again comes through with a solo home run in the top of the 10th. And then Chapman nailed it down. So it's been a good week. It didn't start off so good. Those colder days, the Yankees, they don't like to play. So I got snowed out of opening day. I was supposed to go to opening day at the stadium, and it freaking snowed. They had 5 inches of snow on the field at Yankee Stadium. So I take off opening day, but I got to work the next day when it's rescheduled for. Two out of the last 3 opening days have gotten snowed out for me.
Bummer. Dang.
But yeah, they're still behind the Red Sox, who are doing very well too. But the Yanks are fun to watch. A lot of young players who are doing good things. I'm happy to see that.
How
an A-Rod-less team is a lovable team.
And you're not a fan of it. I don't remember that coming up. That your distaste for A-Rod. Do you now hate Jennifer Lopez?
He's a carpetbagger. He's not a Yankee.
Okay, gotcha.
Felt the same way about Reggie Jackson.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I don't. I'm a hardcore football guy. So we are recording this the weekend of the NFL draft, and but my new team, the Los Angeles Rams, has they've traded away a ton of their draft picks because they did a bunch of free agency moves, and so because I also have kids and I've been busy. I'm up for husband of the year. I don't want to brag, but
go ahead.
it's funny that I think I accidentally sound like a douchosaurus with all of the friends that I have. I did not bring this up. I never said anything, but we've been planning this surprise trip. I told Natalie I had a surprise trip for her. And what really happened was her best friend from school, like they've known each other since they were 10 years old. She called and said, "Hey, I want to come down and see Natalie. Can we pick a weekend?" I said, "I love this plan. You tell me when you could come and I got Southwest points or whatever." She's like, no, I'll take care of the airfare. Or whatever. I said, okay. I said, how about this? You take care of the airfare. I'll take care of the destination. She's like, great. Love it. Because she's like, I know nothing down there. So I booked them a room at a Marriott on Coronado Island, which is down in San Diego. It's right on the ocean. And because Natalie loves the ocean. And then I got them a couples massage at 2 o'clock today on the day that we're recording this. And then later on tonight, they're going to go to a nice steakhouse for dinner that I picked because I knew that Natalie would like the desserts. And I figured, how could you go wrong with steak? And it's funny, right? When you book this stuff. So I didn't say, let me first say this. I did not tell my friends any of this. And you all know, if you try to do this, your kids also can't know. So I had to kind of set my kids up to where they think we're going on this fun trip. And then there's all these things that I liked about it because I'm a stereotypical dad where I very rarely get to feel this way. I know this is going to make me sound like such a douche, this whole talk. But point is, my wife was like, okay, well, who's going to be watching the dogs? And I just kept saying it's all taken care of because she didn't know that I wasn't going anywhere. So therefore, I didn't plan anything. And then she's like, well, what are you doing about dance class and then football practice? And then what about their football game on Sunday? And I was like, we'll probably be back in time. I'll take care of it. I'll take care of it. I'll take care of it. Right. In the meantime, I'm like, fuck. And then last night,
a lot of plates spinning there.
Oh, dude, you have no idea. And then Friday. So Friday is the day that her friend arrives and I'm supposed to pick her up at the airport. Part of the original plan was the friend was just going to show up at the front door because Natalie works from home now. And I thought that would be so much fun and great. But her friend wanted me to see the surprise because I've missed it. And I guess evidently my wife kind of ugly cries when she sees her, is what her friend says.
Okay. Did you have a video camera?
No. And so what I did was I went and got her at the airport, and then I had to take her back to work with me because Natalie got stuck at work. So then I finished some work, and then I got off early because last night we had a Booster Club magic show, which, by the way, if anybody is involved in any of this stuff, and you got a guy who's either who's a magician or something or does kid shows, this is a great fundraiser. We didn't have a ton of people show up, but I mean, we had a third of the room filled, which was great for an elementary school fundraiser. It did better than most of our other fundraisers. And it was so much fun. It was such a great thing to watch all of the parents walk in with their kids because it's Friday night and they're kind of tired from the week. And you could tell they're kind of like, oh, boy. But this guy, and his name, by the way, is Eric Buss. If you want to check him out, go to ericbuss.com. And if he's ever doing a theater show or anything near you, I'm sure he's got a newsletter. I haven't checked that part yet. But you should see him because he's very funny and just a really good magician. I mean, he's just an all-around fun show. I like his show because the tricks sneak up on you. Like, you all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, he just did it. It's great. But anyway, right. It was fun to watch.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah,
about
please.
That?
Yeah.
Do you guys have any of these comedy show charity businesses opening up at your way? Because we have several of them. And it's actually a wonderful thing. They do comedy shows for anything, whether it's a school fundraiser, someone who's sick and needs money to help pay for medical bills, things like that. And it's a booming business, not just for them and organizations, but also for us comedians, because they stick us in a room with 300 people who paid to come and laugh and support a charity. Those are some of the best crowds you can perform in front of.
Yeah.
So I wondered about that as you were, talking to me about things before. If they're not popping up out there, well, maybe some things start out here and work their way out to the West. But they seem to be quite lucrative. One of them they've raised over $3 million in the 2.5 years they've been in business.
So, I believe it. It's a great way because for the most part, even if you're doing like even a celebrity, what's nice about comics is that they kind of do it usually not for the money. They do it for lack of options. And so
right,
they don't
right,
know
but
how
the
to,
money is pretty good.
The money
I mean,
is pretty good.
They pay us pretty well. And every show averages, if over $5,000 every show they do between raffles and everything else that they incorporate in. They print the tickets. They do the advertise. I mean, I'm telling you, in Connecticut, there's at least four now that do it. And I get a lot of gigs from them, and because they're fundraisers, they're like PG-13. So you can't step over the line. They look for clean comics, no politics, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, it's some of the most fun shows that you can have. So
I had a great time last night at this one. And to be honest, they could be a thing out here. I've been so out of the comedy world for the last 4 years that it could be. And I'm just not aware because I'm not out really trying to book gigs anymore.
It's a damn shame because you were very funny.
Oh, thanks, man. Thank you. I do like, it's funny. I know it's not how you meant it, but I like the idea that I was that, like, you know what I mean? Like when you stop going out on the road, then all of a sudden you lose your humor, but it is kind of true.
I have to open for Gilbert Gottfried tonight and I haven't been on stage since April 6th.
Yes.
Let's see how this goes. We had a
radio listener speaking of fundraiser show. He asked me to come down and do a show for his Rotary Club. And he heard me on the morning show a while ago. And so I said, sure, I'll come out. But it had been five, six months since I'd done a set. And now I'm headlining, doing a 45 minutes to an hour. And you can't, no matter how many times I've done this hour, which is something I refined years ago, and just kind of it becomes a show that you kind of just walk with. Right. And I've done it even where if there's too long of a gap, I've listened to my own comedy album so I could go back and kind of reabsorb the material in the order it goes in and stuff. It's so sad. But I went out there,
I'll
had a great time, and it's
this
all
afternoon.
Yeah, it's all fun, but it's funny. You do feel that rust. It's true. What you'll hear comics say is that you have to keep getting up. You have to keep those. It's like going to the gym if you're a professional wrestler. I only say that because I watched the Andre the Giant documentary.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Oh, it's
yet.
Great. It's really good.
The one thing I do sometimes when there's rust, the jokes are fresher. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You haven't told them over and over again. So sometimes it works to your benefit to take a little break. But I always find that, like, if I get a funny bone weekend and it's like six shows in 4 days, it's like comedy boot camp.
Yep.
And I'm like, on the Sunday night, I feel I'm at the top of my game. And then you take a week off.
Yeah, you're taking time off now.
Away anyhow.
Yeah,
it's
so
just to stop lifting weights. So
we had this magic show, and I had to. I was, since I'm the president of the Booster Club, I just pulled the kids from football practice. I pulled them from dance. I figure I'll be there because I knew Natalie was going to leave, and she drove down. And I, so when I was, the parents and the friends that I have, in fact, even one of the teachers, my son's teacher, listens to the show, and she came out and was like, "So what is this?" They were like, "What's the surprise? What's the surprise?" Because I guess my kids had been talking about it, and Natalie had said that she thought she was going to the Grand Canyon or whatever. And so I was telling them, and then I got to deal with this thing where I'm the guy, and I'm always around all the moms. And so I'm like, "Oh, I had, her friend flew down, and I booked them this weekend. So this is what they're going to do." And they're like, "Oh, great." And they're very, here's the thing. My friends are being complimentary. I know that it's not, they don't really feel this way, but it's always this thing where I feel like I'm accidentally being a douche. Like if I do something nice for my wife, that it makes every I'm not following the bro code. But I got to tell
that's
you,
true. But I don't see it that way. I think that was just a very nice way for you to have a weekend without her.
Yeah. Spoken like a true divorcee. That's funny. And it is. It wasn't an element of being without her, but it was. It presented an opportunity for me and the boys just to hang out. So we're going to probably work on the fort. I told myself, because both Natalie and I have been working like crazy, and the boys have been borderline latchkey kids. I think I'm being unfair to myself, to be honest. I don't truly believe that they've been neglected. If somebody else was in my shoes, I would not look at them and go, "Wow, those poor kids," by any stretch of the imagination. But I don't know if the listeners
are into month three of this fort now.
Yeah, we are. We are.
I think it was like February when I heard about it. So yeah. It's coming along slowly, huh?
It is, yes. Like
my old father-in-law painting a door. Take him 3 months just to get it perfect. It'd be the perfect freaking paint job, but Jesus.
Well, you'll laugh because I've been consistently working on it just about every weekend. And then two Saturdays out of every month, I have to do an appearance, which takes up most of the day. So I really can only work on it about 2 or 3 hours at the end of the day. But I took 1 weekend off because I found out I have a hernia. And it's not bad. It's totally fine. Even I went to go see a surgeon, and he goes, my physician, I had to go to urgent care because I was just kind of worried about it. I wasn't sure what it was. And then they just looked at me like, "Oh yeah, you got a hernia, buddy." And, so then they contacted
me. You're wearing a truss?
No, I'm not. They said, well, nobody told me to get one. And then I did some Googling and I saw it. And it's not like if you don't know what a hernia is and you Google it, I don't have anything close to what you see on the Google MD, as Dr. J calls it. I'm so happy with my physician because urgent care called her, like sent her the paperwork for my visit at the end of her day on Monday. I went on Saturday. At the end of her day on Monday, she called me and she said, "What's going on? You got a hernia? Like, what happened?" I was like, Wow, I'm so lucky to have a doctor who would do this. And
yeah, we get reports from the extended care centers and stuff, and it's always it's real good brown nosing to follow up on a kid. So
I got to tell you, it really does. If there is any element of customer service, to what you do, I can't.
Oh,
tell
there
you.
Is. Trust me. Trust me. Patient satisfaction surveys. My would you recommend this practice to a friend is down to 82.7%.
Wow. You worry about that but presidential approval rating.
Well, let me tell you, they base these things on like the 30 out of 2,000 people that return the surveys.
Yeah.
And, you get 1-4 out of 105s and you're down to 82%. Goddamn people.
Sons of bitches. Just put 5 and move on.
Well, I feel like it should be like the auto dealers to say if there's anything, if we receive a survey and any of our service was less than a 5, please see the customer service representative before leaving to see how we can better tend to your needs the next time. And I almost feel like I need to do that when people are leaving.
Yeah.
I said, "Listen, your kid lived another week. What else
welcome.
Do you want from
What's
me?
What's your problem, you son of a bitch?"
Infection? No ear infection. Hey.
Oh, my God. I would love to see you do your act as Andrew Dice Clay. That would be so much fun. Pediatrician Andrew Dice Clay. But to put a button on this is that I do want to say this. For the dads out there. Especially if you have a stay-at-home mom type situation with your lovely lady, And if you can hack it, if you can hack it, if maybe it's harder if your kid's like 6 months old, right? I get that. If it's sick, if your kid is under a year old, here's my recommendation. I think you could pull off an afternoon. So set up a day, call her friends. And if all of their friends have kids that are under the age of a year old, you know, check in with all of them or contact the dads, even if you're friends with them, and just say, hey, what if we all got together? We took the kids to the park for an afternoon, or just scheduled, and we kind of split the workload between us three or four dudes so the girls could have a spa afternoon or just go and have a brunch or something along those lines. But if your kids are in that above, the youngest one is above that five, and you feel good about having them for a weekend. And I mean this because I'm pretty sure that the dads listening to the show are like, listen, asshole, I take care of the kids. On the off chance that you're not that dad, I get that there's two sides to a family. You could be a breadwinner.
I take care of my kids.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there was a recent joke I saw where, like, I have to babysit, which I've never heard this phrase even in my circle of friends. But I guess, like, some dads call it babysitting, and they're like, it's not babysitting when it's your kid.
Which I call it child rearing. That's what I do.
Yeah, that's right.
I got to go home and child rear.
Reared some childs. And, but anyway, set up a weekend. Get the girlfriends together, surprise her, give her a weekend away. Here's the thing. It will only earn you one amazing session of sex. That is you have to be prepared that it may not have the residual payoff down the road. As a guy who's done this a time or two, but you also, what's really great about my wife's best friend is I call just to check in on her, and I don't call her after that. Like, I checked in to make sure she got there and all that stuff. And was having fun, and the traffic wasn't too bad. And then I don't call for the rest of the weekend. I let her be. But anyway, point is, on the way down there, my wife's best friend said, so are you going to fuck him, or am I going to have to? Because somebody has to fuck this guy. Because they were having so much fun. And that is also very important. Your wife has to have a solid best friend who will set you up. Sure. Oh, and Becca is the best. She is the best.
If I may add one more thing.
Absolutely.
It's a very sweet gesture. But in another 10 to 20 years, when she decides to leave you, those are not the memories she's going to have in her memory.
That's
bank.
Also
That's
true.
That's all I'm saying.
It's also
maybe
true.
It's good for a week or two of a little bit of something, but those aren't the things they remember.
My friend, when both of us were working full time, we were honestly kicking around the idea of getting like a cleaning lady or whatever. And we did. So, but we were looking around at my wife, we have a friend that's like, we met through our kids are friends is what I'm trying to say.
Yep.
And he told me I did not even see this coming. He's like, dude, you got to get the cleaning lady. And I go, what do you mean? He goes, the first three times she comes, oh my God, instant sex every time, because she's so appreciative.
With the cleaning lady?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I want that service here. I don't think that's offered in Connecticut.
I'm sure you can figure it out. You just got to do a little Google search.
But they shut down the Craigslist. There's no way I'll ever find a house. Keeper.
Right? Not the one you're looking for. And so anyway, and he was right. He goes, it's only for the first three visits. Then after that, it's like it never happens. Then it becomes normal and nobody cares
anymore.
You only
sign up for a month and a half.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you could do that. You could shut it down, just like comedy. You could shut it down and then go back after a few visits. Yep. Oh my gosh, we talked a bunch. Let's touch on this subject a little bit, because we covered a lot of the sleep stuff with Dr. Canapari. By the way, if you haven't checked out that episode, go back and check it out. He's a friend of Dr. J's. Well, I guess he was a student of yours is a better way of describing it, right?
One of my very smart medical students.
Yeah. And now he's head of the Yale Sleep Center. That's so awesome. So anyway, Dr. J found this great article, which was kind of what we touched on in room sharing and stuff like that. And when your baby is your roommate. And there's some interesting statistics in this where the overall gist of why people suggest that you at least have the bassinet in your bedroom in the beginning. I guess at some point it might have been for ease of breastfeeding. But now
that's part of it. Yep.
Now it's become more about the SIDS thing. And that's and that's sudden infant death syndrome. Am I understanding that right?
Yes, sir.
And so in 2015, there were 3,700 cases of where thousands of babies die every year in the United States, around 3,700 in 2015. And of those 3,700, 1,600 were classified as SIDS. And obviously that's, you know, way too many, even though I don't like to scare people on this show. And I hope that that's not what's coming across. It's not what you have to worry, but I think it's fun. It's interesting to talk about, because there's things in here that I don't think most of us would think about. And one of the things that they talk about is that sleeping in the bedroom is good. It deters SIDS. And they said because their belief is, well, let me break down. I'm all over the place on this, Doc. I'm sorry. There are three components to SIDS in their mind. First, the infant may have some intrinsic anatomic or physiological risk factor. Second, there's a critical period of development when babies are vulnerable before age of 6 months. Third, there is an environmental component involving sleep position, bed sharing, or overheated rooms. The final mechanism of death may be a failure to arouse out of deep sleep. So the belief is that by having the baby in the room, because remember Dr. Canapari said that if the baby is not in your room, everybody sleeps better. Because when you get into those like circadian rhythms and stuff, it's all about how much deep sleep you have. My dad is obsessed with deep sleep on his stupid Fitbit. He goes, look, I got 4 hours of deep sleep. But the point is, what were you going to say? I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say my girlfriend has one of those Fitbit watches, too, and she gets only like 4 hours a night of really good sleep.
Really deep sleep. Here's the thing. I don't know what your thought is on this, Doc, but my philosophy, my wife, every time she gets up to go to the bathroom, she looks what time it is. And I said, and she goes, oh, I got up at 12 o'clock and then I had to get up again at 2 o'clock. And I said, you know what I bet? I bet that if you stopped looking at the time, you wouldn't feel so tired in the morning. Like, how much of that is psychological?
Never look at the time. Yeah. Never look at the time. I could have 10 minutes more to sleep. I don't know it. I go right back to bed, fall right to sleep.
Right.
Never look at the time.
But anyway, so one of the things that they were talking about in this article is that they said that by having the baby in the room and the room noise and stuff, that they actually don't enter a deep enough sleep, which could actually help them fight against SIDS. Because I guess that if they're basically sleeping with their face against the mattress and they go into a deep sleep, they don't get woken up to where they would move their head at all.
And make it clear that we're talking about the baby sleeping like in a bassinet in the parents' room, not in the parents' bed, because that's a bad thing.
Because it breaks it down. In fall of 2016, the American Academy of Pediatrics revised its guidelines for safe sleep, recommending that infants sleep in the parents' bedroom, but emphatically not in the parents' bed for at least the first 6 months of the baby's life and ideally the first year. The guidelines also recommend a safe sleep surface for the infant without crib bumpers, stuffed animals, pillows, or blankets. We kept our guys, I think for the 6 months at least, in the bassinet. Basically what we did is when they got too big to fit in the bassinet, we put them in a crib in their room.
Right. I think our first one spent maybe a month in our room with the bassinet, and the second one, she just went right into the other room in the crib. Hell with you. But that is a new relatively new recommendation. And I think that, you know, for everyone to get a good night of sleep, a year sounds a little excessive. But I'd say, you know, there's nothing wrong with the first 6 months having the baby sleep in the bassinet in your room, and then, you know, have them gradually transition to the crib by, you know, letting them take a nap, you know, the short nap in the crib, so that, you know, it's not a difficult transition on the night you decide to move them to a different room. But there's also a significant drop off in the number of deaths that are classified as SIDS deaths after 6 months. So the real risk for babies is in that, you know, first 6 months. So,
and the idea of it being that at around 5 to 6 months is when they can kind of roll over on their own, right?
Right. Yeah. And, you know, just the back to sleep program started in like 1992, very early in my practice. So I, you know, never had a time where we've recommended that babies, you know, sleep on their belly. But between 4 and 6 months, they can figure out which way, you know, they want to sleep, and they're going to do it in 10 seconds after you walk out of the room, an hour later, 3 hours later. And well, at least you have the comfort knowing that they can roll over and, you know, kind of fix themselves and get to the other side if they need to. But, you know, I recommend that parents always put the kids down on their back, and whatever position they then, you know, move to, you know, is fine. And then you see the drop off after 6 months when they can roll over in their bed. So, you know, and it mentioned in their overheated rooms too, which I think is important to point out. Parents want to keep the room nice and warm for the baby, but they find that temperatures higher than, you know, 70, 72 degrees in the room the baby's sleeping in has a statistically higher rate of SIDS, as well as a smoker in the house also increases the risk of SIDS as
Oh, really? I didn't know that one. That's interesting. There was also a study in the Journal of Pediatrics that that they said the families that continued room sharing longer were at higher risk of moving the child into the parent's bed, which is unsafe. As for babies, those that moved to their own room sometimes after age 4 months had better sleep consolidation and longer overall sleep extended out to age 2.5 years. So if you feel like you're not getting a lot of sleep and your kid is close to that 4 to 6 month range, it might not be a bad idea to try and move them into a crib in their own room, and then everybody gets more sleep, like we learned with Dr. Canapari.
And it's always, life is always better if everybody gets a good night of sleep.
Right. I like this, though. It says, but should babies should not be put down on surfaces like water beds. Oh, I get it. For some reason, I just now realized. For some reason, I thought, who sells a crib that's a water bed? But what they're saying is, if you own a water bed, I'm an idiot. I'm a total idiot. And as we learned with Dr. Canapari, cushioned armchairs and stuff, like, they even talk about that if you need to breastfeed in your bed and are afraid that you might fall asleep while breastfeeding, they said to remove blankets, pillows, everything from the area so that if that happens, because that will be at least the safest scenario. But a lot of times what happens is the baby slips down to the side, even in a recliner or something like that, and that is no bueno.
Remember when Christopher on The Sopranos fell asleep on Cosette, Adriana's dog, and suffocated. Small dog.
Only you, Dr. J. Only you.
Remember that?
No, I don't. I don't remember, but only you would use The Sopranos as an analogy for taking care of babies in sleep training.
Yeah, you know, you got to get the message across somehow.
Right.
You know?
Whatever
can my folks. It's my folksy wisdom. Dog is starting to piss me off, though.
All right.
Stop it, Rodney. I got no food for you. There's nothing.
We'll take a break and see if we can't talk Rodney off the edge after these messages. During the break that you have some Huey Lewis news that I'm not aware of, but maybe some of the listeners are.
I must have a different news source than you, because it was right at the top of my news feed. Yeah, apparently Huey Lewis canceled the 2018 tour this year. He was supposed to open for Jimmy Buffett at Fenway Park, and I was going to go to that. And unfortunately, he has a hearing problem, something called Meniere's disease, and he's taking a break. He's having trouble, I guess, hearing himself when he's got his headsets on. And I can certainly say that explains a lot from the concert I went to last November. I'm teasing. I love the man. I'm so sad. Huey Lewis. God damn it, Huey, if you hear this, get better, man. There's a pediatrician in Connecticut that only lives and breathes to see you at least twice a year.
He's telling you to listen to the greatest hits, then, you schmuck. That's what he says. He's an avid listener of the show. I'm sorry to tell you, but Huey Lewis,
that's
big fan of the Dad Podcast. He says it really helps pass the time when he's fly fishing in the middle of nowhere.
With Jimmy Kimmel.
Yes, exactly. Here's another article that I thought was really interesting. I mean, I feel like I get a lot of the analogies, but I like the way that they put them, was that it's five things that your toddler's brain is like. So I figured we would run through these here with you, Dr. Dre. Ooh, Dr. Dre on the show. Let's get him on with Dr. Dre.
God, if I had Dr. Dre's money.
I would be fly fishing with you if you had Dr. Dre's money. You and Huey. Let's see. Number one, your toddler's brain is like a game of ping pong. And it goes in, it kind of says that it's like there's just a back and forth.
Serve and return.
And what does that mean? Like, because I get the concept, but is it really that simple?
Because the baby does something, you do something in response to the baby's signal. Like it cries or, you know, makes noises, and then you pick the baby up when they're crying, and the connections are formed that help the baby build social skills and connections. And it's so important, too. There's one of the articles I was looking at says really that first 18 months of parent, particularly mom and baby contact, is just so important. They develop neural connections that help them establish social relationships with humans. It's like, you know, one day the baby accidentally says, mama, And the mother smiles and goes crazy and says, oh, she said mama for the first time. That's amazing. And the baby says, what the fuck did I say? What did I say? And then like a couple days later, it accidentally comes out of her mouth again. And the mother has the same reaction. And then they start to connect words with people and reactions and facial cues and things like that. It just builds up that recognition. And it's really established in like the first year and a half or so.
Does it make me a creep that all I'm really hearing is that it sounds like all of our babies are scientists, alien scientists experimenting on us to learn our language and figure out our civilization?
They are. I think that's a good analogy too.
The other one is that your toddler's brain is like a mirror. And I think I get this one. And this one, honestly, this one is the most frustrating part of parenting for me in that a big part of parenting is that you want to make your kids better than you, right? To a certain extent, you want to improve upon society in your kids. Rachel Cruz, Dave Ramsey's daughter, when she was on the show and in her book, Smart Money, Smart Kids, she said, more is caught than taught, which I think is a great way to put that. And so am I right in my understanding of this is that by mirroring is that they're looking at what you're doing, but aren't necessarily paying attention to what you're telling them to do as much. Like your example is what really is internalized more than what you're saying. No, don't do this. Do this.
Right. And they're watching all the time. Most of the things the kids learn from growing up in a house with their parents are things that parents aren't even teaching consciously.
Right. That's the thing I have. I find it interesting. I've said this a lot. I make no bones about it. I yell a lot. I'm a yeller because we don't strike kids anymore. That's a thing, and I'm fine with it. But I don't have a place to put the mirroring I did with my father my frustration and rage. So, So while Natalie's out of town, I even had a borderline meltdown last night where we went to go do the magic show. The kids were great. They helped clean up. Everything was awesome. And so I said, one of them was like, hey, I'm kind of hungry. I said, well, you know what? I never do this. So I'm like, let's go get a treat. What do you guys want to do? You guys want to score some ice cream? You want to go have dessert at a restaurant? Like, what do you want to do? And they picked frozen yogurt. So we went to Yogurt Land, had a great time. And then we come home and it was late. It was like getting close to 10 o'clock and they didn't have school the next day. But I was like, you guys need to get to bed. So I said, here's the thing. We went out, we had fun. We had a good time, right? I need you to move with urgency to get your showers done, to get your teeth brushed so we can get into bed, right?
Reasonable request.
Yes. And I said, and I go, and let's remember how dad is wired and that dad just took you to Yogurt Land, right? So, and they're like, yep, you got it, Pops. And then as soon as we cross the threshold of the door, it doesn't matter. Like they're screwing around. I forgot to yell at them because after I got them to bed and I screamed at them about how it was taking too long, and how I thought it was kind of rude that I go, we went out and did this fun thing. And all I asked you to do was to just have some urgency, you know, like, and the part that really pisses me off is that at one time my son was literally lounging on the toilet, taking a shit like it was a lazy boy. When I came into the bathroom, like he's just sitting
legs
back.
Kicking,
yeah. You know, like leaning back on the tank, like a low rider taking a shit. Like, I'm pretty sure that takes squatty potty to like zero, like negative levels of effectiveness. I'm not sure, but that's how disinterested he was in getting in the shower, getting his teeth brushed. And so I just lose it. I just like I go, if you do not get your ass in that shower in the next 2 minutes, you're going to lose video games for a week. And it's so crazy.
No F-bomb in there.
No, I said I'm not in that sentence, but I'm not going to lie. I said it to him like that. I go, there was a lot of, I think my specific phrase, I'm like, the fact that I have to ask you guys something and then come in here three times and it takes you 30 minutes for two of you to take a shower and brush your teeth is fucking bullshit to me. That's what I said.
That's good. I think my older one was 16 the first time I told her to fuck off for the first time. Sometimes you reach down and you have nothing to refute the last thing they say and you just go, oh, suck off, will you?
I did have a moment. This was not. I was fine with how it went last night.
You're going to have to put the explicit on again. I tried.
No, it's always explicit. It's all right. You can cuss as much as you want on the show. So anyway, though, it's funny that we were on this topic because last night I felt fine. I felt fine with the yelling. I mean, I wasn't happy about it, but it's just like sometimes I feel guilty when I get angry, and that was not one of those times. I'm like, dude, you guys.
Well, you were legitimate. You made a deal with him. It was a request. Did you give them a reminder before exploding? Or was it just they? I'm just asking. Remember the deal we had in the car, guys?
I did not remind him of the deal. I did go in there and say, I said, "Hey, I go, guys, you need to stop screwing around, okay? This is after I said we get in the house, they start, and it's just like it takes 10 minutes for anybody to get in the fucking shower." And I was just sitting there, and I go, "I'm just like, hey guys, come on, let's go." And I do like the hand clap because I was feeding the dogs from the kitchen. And then there was no response. I go, "Am I being heard?" And they go, "Yeah."
I would have reminded them of the verbal agreement previously discussed.
That's a smart move.
I'd say, just to say, guys, and remember, we had a deal. You're going to get in out of the shower, and boom, because it's late. Maybe a little reminder might have helped. I'm just saying.
You might be right. And then the second time I went in there, I said, "Hey," I wasn't calm at this point, but I wasn't where I was where I said this is.
Did you have veins bulging in your forehead?
No, not even close. But it was more of like maybe 8 decibels, 6 decibels louder. Where I said, "Hey, guys, we went to Yogurtland, all right?" And I go, all I'm asking is for you to get in the shower and do it quickly, please, so we can get to bed. We have to move forward. Am I
now,
clear?
Now, with the reminder, then it still didn't happen.
Nope. And so
you're legitimate to lose your fucking mind. Okay. I just wanted it spelled out for you. I mean, if a reminder wasn't there, if they had forgotten about the deal because they got a sugar high from Yogurtland, you know, but you reminded them. Yes, you had every right to blow up at that point and tell them a week without Yogurtland afterwards.
That's true. Oh, my God. And it's such a sad thing that I tell them a week without video games, because when you punish your kids by taking away video games, I don't know if anybody else can relate
to this.
Then
they're up your ass.
Not even that. It's more that like, what am I doing wrong as a parent where this is more important to you than just me asking you to do something? And I'm sure that the common sense, like I had a friend who listened to the show when Rachel started first coming on the show. And she said the phrase, women need to feel loved in order to have sex, and men need to have sex in order to feel loved. And it kind of blew my mind just the way she put it. I was like, oh, really? And when my friend saw me and he goes, "Really? Was that much of a shocker for you?" Like, and I go, "Yeah, it was." He goes, "You idiot." Like, so
it's like all you need is a bumper sticker and you're at peace. You know?
Exactly. I like everything to put into all of my life phrases. Every life lesson should be on a fortune cookie or a bumper sticker. And then that makes it easier for me to process life. But maybe everybody else is like, well, yeah, of course you could threaten them with video games. But to me, I always have this extra level of bullshit guilt and anxiety that gets piled on top of there. So then, and there was a couple more warning shots, because I remember it being like the fifth time where I genuinely felt like I was losing it.
Fifth time? I would have thrown him into bed and said, "You guys can stink when you go to school tomorrow."
Yeah. Here's how I know when I'm really losing it is my grandfather, when he would get frustrated with us as kids, he would get so angry that he would start to whine. You're like, "Oh, why'd you have to go and do that for, son?" Like, is how he would do it.
Yeah.
And I start to where it's like, it sounds like I'm going to angry cry at them is where when I lose it, where I was just like, "Guys, I took you to Yogurtland and we had fun and we went to, we did the magic show and I was like, this is great and we're going to have a great weekend together. Why does it have to be this way? Why can't you just go to bed? Because the fact that we do all this stuff and all I wanted you to do was get ready to go to bed quickly. And you can't do that is fucking bullshit."
I agree with you. They are trying. And you know what? The kids do go through periods and sometimes in synchrony and sometimes not. They stagger where they're assholes at certain ages. They are. So it's not someone you would want to give a hug for, you know, months at a time.
My 6-year-old. You know,
but that is all part of the whole process.
My 6-year-old.
And I'm glad to see that you're raising two future yellers as well.
Yeah, exactly. We're paying it forward. Well, by the time they become parents, yelling is going to be the new spanking. Like I've said, you're going to be the only discipline you're going to have is very intentful eye contact. And then eventually that will be too aggressive. You'll have to.
That's all my dad needed.
I know.
My father could parent across a crowded room just with the glare.
Oh, I've done that a couple of times, but it's not the same. Did your dad ever hit you though?
Oh yeah. That was a given. But again, as I often say, looking back, it was deserved. And
yes,
I know that I was a major pain in the ass, and the things that I got, you know, kicked or hit with were legitimate gripes. He yeah. never came home drunk and hit me for fun. I mean, my mother, she broke wooden spoons over my ass.
Yeah.
And she was good with a shoe.
Yes.
A thrown shoe. She was a lefty.
Part of what I call the come down on my rant was after I lose it, and then that always gets them. This is the part that also is frustrating, is that it has to get to that level. And then
you gave them their reward. They're building it. They like when you lose it. That's why you gave them just what they wanted. And then they said, all right, we got what we wanted. And now we go. You got to find a different approach.
Don't make me hate you, Dr. J, with your wisdom. Don't do that. Not today. Because you're so
the
right.
The two of them, they don't even have to talk. Their brains are connected. So what can we do to make that explode tonight?
Here's what I think, though. And this is part of my paternal stupidity and eternal stupidity, is that the older one, I really don't believe, is wired that way. He's the one who gets it. But the younger one really is. He's got a lot of fuck you in him. He's got a lot of it in spades. And what happens is his fuck you horn of plenty overflows into his brother's empathy cup.
I remember from high school, the theory of the group man.
Oh,
where
God.
People just get caught up in the moment and then they all have the same point of view.
I know I'm getting us off topic here, but I think it's a funny story just to because you said that they become assholes during certain phases. The 6-year-old is definitely in an asshole phase. He did this thing where I came home from work and there was a plastic bag of like random food, like craisins and a half of what looked like a tuna sandwich on a hoagie roll. And I was like, oh, Natalie must have gone to like a company thing or something like that. And so then I come home and then he goes, oh, did you see this? And I pointed to this plastic bag and he goes, that's for mom, not you. I got that for her. He goes, that's for mom. I got that for her today. And I tease him and I said, oh, where's mine? And then he goes, because I always like to do that, because if he says, oh, I didn't get one for you, then I go, oh, well, that's not fair, because that's what they say to me all the time. Right.
Right.
And
right,
so
right.
So I said, oh, where's mine? He goes, he goes, well, you could share that one with mom if it's OK with her. And I was like, OK, sure. Great. I like it. You know, but in my mind, I didn't think anything of it. And then she goes, yeah, she goes, wasn't that sweet of him to get that for me? And then when she said, isn't that sweet of him? I'm not saying that my younger son is without love or affection. He's a very loving kid. And that's another part of what I was going to say earlier. The come down from my rant is always like, listen, guys, I want you to know that I love you like crazy. And I know you're great kids. It is never lost on me that you are great kids. But I recently used this analogy. I said, but here's the thing. You got to look at it this way. Your mom's and my patience is like a jar of marbles, okay? And every time I have to tell you to sit on your butt or hurry up and get in the shower or any of that stuff, you're taking a jar, sometimes two or three out at a time. And when that jar gets empty, I start yelling and cursing because I'm so freaking angry. And then when you knock over a glass of water and spill it all over a bunch of papers, this happened to me. I had to tell my son, he goes, I spilled. And he was just sitting going, like he's two. And then I was just sitting there, and then he goes, Dad, I spilled, and it's just spreading all over the table, and he's just doing the deer in headlights staring, and I go, what the fuck? And I get up, and I start cleaning it up, and he got it on, like, school pictures and these, like, papers for his mom. Like, I was like, ah. And it's all stuff that shouldn't have been on the dining room table. I'm not without blame in this, but point is, he was holding up a paper, and he was kind of trying to help, and I said, I'm sorry, but I need you to be away from me right now, because I was so afraid I was going to backhand him. I was so afraid. I go, and he just saw me, and he goes, okay, and he just cleared out by about 8 feet. And then later on, after I calmed down, I said, I'm sorry I lost it, and then I told him the whole, like, the analogy thing or whatever about the marbles.
So did you get out clothespins and a string and pin them all up like a psychopath's apartment?
I wish I had. I just laid them out on the kitchen counter because I figured they were safe out of reach. But so I use that. I always have the come down analogy. But to get back to the plastic bag stories that he said, I got that from Omni Sweet. And I was like, that's a red flag in my brain. That child does things to help him because he is of that age. He does not do things for other people. But he is of a diabolical level of assholedom where he knows that he's A, cute, and B, that he could do these things, and it tugs at people's heartstrings. He is such a master manipulator, this little fuckwad.
Already,
oh, my God.
Huh?
Oh, it's diabolical. I mean, he borders on a super villain level. Like, it is, and it's funny because as a dad, I've said this on the show where it's like, I don't want to suck that out of him, but at the same time, I need to teach him to only use it for good. Like, so he says, we're having our family dinner, and we're doing our usual chat, and that's when this lunch thing came up, and he goes, I got that for mom. And I said, why? I go, mom has lunch here, and I'm just seeing what he says. And it was because I thought she would like it. I said, okay. What was in that bag that you didn't give mom? And then he kind of looks at me like, oh, fuck. And Natalie goes, she goes, what are you doing? And I said, what? She goes, he got me a nice lunch. What? I go, no. I go, no, he didn't. I go, I'm guaranteeing you that. I go, was it because there was something that you wanted to get from the cafeteria at school that you, if you just got that thing, they wouldn't let you get it? But if you bought the whole lunch with my money, that then you could have that thing, and then you just took it outside, sat at the table, ate the thing or maybe two things in the bag that you wanted to eat and said, well, I'm going to take the rest of this home to my mom as a gift, because then people go, oh, look at the cute little first graders getting shit for his mom. Meanwhile, they don't know he wolfed down about four chocolate chip cookies and a half a bag of chips, and that was his lunch. And then he kind of looked at me, and he goes, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, my daughter did the same thing. I get a call from the school saying that can't get a money milk every day. So the woman, instead of, because she didn't have the tickets, would give her free milk, and she'd have the 35 cents. She'd do it to buy cookies. And that went on for like 2 weeks. And I get a call saying, how come you're not sending your daughter to school with the money? I said, I am. He goes, well, I have to give her milk every day. I said, all right, I'll get to the bottom of this. And she's, yeah, six right? years old, first grade, man. I'm telling you, they are sneaky bastards.
Yes. And it always makes me, these moments right here always makes me, when they're like, when people say things like, well, developmentally, they can't process that or whatever. I know that they're right on some level. I'm not arguing, but it makes it hard for me to swallow that horse pill of bullshit in my mind, because I just feel like, how can they be so aware of this but not understand?
But unaware of everything else.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's unbelievable.
Because
you're
it
right.
doesn't serve them. I think it's, they learn things faster when it observes them, which is why we're talking about this whole mirroring thing. But point is, sure enough, he got it because he got a chocolate chip cookie and a bag of chips, and that was all he had for lunch. And Natalie was like, well, he also wanted to do something nice for his mom. And so I said, uh-huh. And so later on, I said, honey, I know that it's cute and fun, and I get that part that you like, that he's kind of being a salesman and all that stuff. I said, but honestly, seriously, you got to learn to see through this shit, and you got to call it for what it is, because there's a reason why. I think I told the story recently where he threw himself on the ground. I got a text picture from his first grade teacher. This woman's been teaching elementary school for damn near 2 decades, and my son did something that she's like, I don't know what the fuck to do.
I've never seen this before. Well, I get that kind of thing too. I'll see a rash and I'll look and I've never seen this before.
And so she sent me a picture, says he threw himself on the ground and won't get up because I told him to rewrite a paper that we said it's a rough draft, you're gonna have to do a final draft. And I said, just ignore him and he'll move on. And then when Natalie picked him up, he told her this sob story about how he had to change his card because, and he was upset because everybody was laughing and making fun of him. And I was running around after school doing some stuff for Booster Club, and then I came and met them while we were waiting to pick up the older kid who got out later. And she goes, tell Dad what happened today. He goes, no. And he just like hides his head in her thigh, and she goes, no, you could tell Dad, it's okay. And I got down, put my hands on my knees, and I said, yeah, son, why don't you tell Dad what happened today? Because guess what? Dad already knows. And he kind of looks at me through her, like off of her leg. I said, yeah, Miss Crystal, she sent me a picture. So what happened? And she goes, and she said, well, he said that the kids were laughing and pointing at him and it hurt his feelings and that he got in trouble. And I said, oh, is that what you told Mom? And I said, and he goes, uh-huh. And I said, so how come you don't want to tell me what happened? He goes, I don't want to. And I said, is it because you know that I already know and that chances are you threw a fit because your teacher asked you to rewrite something and you threw yourself on the ground, and that I don't think people were pointing and laughing at you, but they were probably more worried about you because you got a classroom of really nice kids who, when I was a kid, I didn't say this part to him, but when I was a kid, yeah, you would have got made fun of and laughed at if you did that. But today, everybody is so super kind and sympathetic. Like, everybody empathizes with everybody in the classroom, at least at my kid's school. I see nothing. I'm sure that there are like 3 or 4 examples of kids being assholes to each other, and I get that part of it. But if you compare statistically to the way things used to be when we were growing up,
yeah.
Right? I've seen so many examples of kids like literally throwing a child level tantrum, like 4 years younger than who they are, and the other kid just coming on, like putting an arm around them. Both of my sons have had emotional breakdowns at football games, and the other kids on their team go, hey, man, it's okay. And they come over just because they're you could tell, to go back to what we're talking about, they're mirroring that. They're mirroring it because they're seeing
more
people. Right. It's a solid thing. But, yeah, so needless to say.
Probably will be the downfall of civilization, but it's a good thing.
Well, it'll be the end of the American superpower. That's my belief, unless everybody else gets on board. We just got to hope that Europeans.
Remember, we were making fun of people living in the desert in huts?
Yeah. Joke's on us. Here, let's get through these, because this is fun, though. But I want to make sure we hit all five of these if we can. Number three is your toddler's brain is like Play-Doh. And what I like about this is that the people say, it says in the article that people compare kids' brains to sponges that they absorb, but they feel like a better analogy is Play-Doh because it starts off very malleable and movable, but if you let it set out and the more it ages, the more it kind of becomes more rigid and solid. And that by age five, the brain has started to become really rigid, but before age five, there's a lot of malleability to it. Is that right?
Absolutely, yeah. And like I said, that first 18 months sets up the wiring for success. But Play-Doh's a good analogy because it tells you know that it's early that they're picking up most of the stuff that's going to be important for them throughout life. Not the stuff they're learning spelling and math and stuff later on. They're learning their social return, their social wires for the rest of their life. So, but as they get older, that's less possible. They're less pliable. They their brains are kind of set. I don't want to say in stone, but at least a semi-solid plaster of Paris, I guess.
Well, you can. It's even out of stone, you can work and make a piece of art, but it's just more difficult than clay, right?
So that's brain and the nervous system is growing all the way up until the age of 8 to 10, and it's not fully developed till I think the last time I read something, 25 is
you
when
are
they,
spot on.
They say so. It's constantly changing in that first 25 years. Really, I mean, maybe we have to, people used to die earlier. Maybe we have to look at the times of the kids' lives in terms of school and college and everything, and realize that they feel like they're independent, but are they truly independent until after 25? I don't know.
That's why you can claim them on
my fucking health insurance until 26.
That's great. Well, that leads us right into the number four one, which is your toddler's brain is like a weekend in Vegas. And it talks about that very same thing, that the prefrontal cortex, which is the part of the brain responsible for executive function, skills and impulse control, aggression, self-regulation and reasoning, that is still developing in kids under five. In fact, experts believe the prefrontal cortex doesn't reach maturity until around age 25. Right. So, yeah, that nails it right there. And then last but certainly not least, number five, your toddler's brain is like a cave person. This is honestly, so this is where how do you say that word? Amygdala? Amygdala?
Amygdala.
Amygdala, that's what it was. So this is like the lizard brain, right? The center of the brain, right at the base of the spine that controls fight or flight, correct?
Right, right.
And so during their younger years, the amygdala is kind of more of a presence than the higher functioning part of the brain. Am I understanding this correctly? And that's why they're saying it's like a cave person?
Yeah, no filter.
No. That's interesting. I never would have thought of that a cave person just says their mind. Like they have no concept of social norms or anything. That's interesting. Yeah, that's good. All right, let's take a quick break. And then we have some fun stories. Some fun stories. And by fun, I mean some real bullshit stuff that's going on with kids today right after these messages.
Mama won't give me rabies.
Oh, you read my mind, Dr. J. Dr. J found this story that is both frightening and hilarious to me. I don't know if I'm allowed to even think this is funny, but in Canada, there's a four-year-old that was given, you're going to have to break this down, it's licinium? Licinium?
Licinium. It's licinium.
And what is that? What is that? Is that just literally what it says? Is it rabid dog saliva? Or was it just dog saliva?
Saliva from a rabid dog, yes, which is legal in Canada.
As a homeopathic remedy. Homeopathic, if you're of Dr. J's education, is Latin for bullshit. I would imagine. Right.
Herbs and spices.
Yes.
And saliva.
So this kid was in preschool, and he was hiding under the table and growling at people. And the parents
growling and barking, right?
Yes. And the parents went to this homeopath, and she wrote a blog. This is how this kind of became a thing, where she wrote a blog, and it went viral, talking about how she gave him Lysinum, which is the saliva from a rabid dog. And she said, Zimmerman said that young children whom she identified only as Jonah, or the young child, I'm sorry, had been bitten by a dog in the past that she suspected that may have led to his problems. This is her quote. People who need Lysinum, also known as hydrophobinum, are often afraid of the dark, of dogs, even of water, have trouble falling asleep, and are overly excitable. Aggression can also be a strong feature, as can dreams of dogs, wolves, and being attacked. This can develop into full psychosis, she wrote. Within a minute or two of giving him the remedy, Jonah smiled at me very broadly and beautifully, as if all the lights had just gone on, Zimmerman wrote. We said our goodbyes, and I felt a warm feeling of hope for this boy.
Yes, yes. Wow. And that's why shit like this, homeopathic stuff, it's one kid this lunatic gave rabid dog saliva to, and he smiled as he left. And that somehow makes it out into the media. I don't expect to have requests from parents in my practice coming in and asking for dog saliva from a rabid dog as a remedy. But I'm sure somebody will read this article and think about it very seriously.
Well, yeah, because everybody's well aware of it now. I mean, I think the last presidential election literally ran to oppose, in opposition of this. And what I mean is that they use this in the negative. Whatever the temperament of the media is, well, that's just it. That's just the media telling you what to think and what to feel. But there's so many examples of this happening where you can, I mean, realistically, if this goes viral enough, you got to figure at least, even if it's 1-5% of the people reading this going, oh, my kid has these things, which, by the way, sounds like almost every kid I know has some kind of a fear of dark dogs or water. It'd be different if it was like dark, medium light, or dusk. You know what I mean? Where they're all in the same category. But it's like, these are people who are afraid of things that are quite fear-causing. I mean, drowning is one of the top three fears of death. Like, of course people are afraid of these things. It's wired into our amygdala, for fuck's sake.
That's right. That's right. And it hasn't, their fight or flight, as we know from the previous article, hasn't matured yet.
Yeah. Then they get a doctor in on this. This is Bonnie Henry, and she's from the British Columbia Provincial Health Office. She's a British Columbia Provincial Health Officer. She said, there is no evidence that I'm aware of that shows lysine has any therapeutic benefit. More importantly, I am concerned that if a product did actually contain what is suggested, saliva from a rabid dog, that would put the patient at risk of contracting rabies, a serious fatal illness. Have you ever seen or heard of a case of a human or a kid getting rabies, or do you know about what effects that would have?
Yeah, recently, I'd say within the last year, I think there was a case of rabies where the kid could have or should have gotten the rabies vaccine, but it was and the immune globulin after exposure. And they refused it. And I think the kid died of rabies. And
wow.
It's, I think, the only, I've been in practice 25 years almost. And I can think of two in the 25 years in this country. But that's once you get it, if you miss that window of getting the series of vaccines and the immune globulin, if you miss that window, there's no cure for it. I'd say maybe the kid needs a little cognitive behavioral therapy.
Right.
I wouldn't go, ladies and gentlemen, please don't go right from aggressive children to the saliva from a rabid dog. Right. Don't ask for it by name. And that's why sometimes this is, you know, the internet is a great thing, but it's a scary thing sometimes when things like this end up in the mainstream news. But as I think I saw in here, you know, they say that it's approved as, you know, something that is in the, you know, the prescribing rights of homeopaths in Canada.
Yeah, at the end of the article, it says, Lysinum is not excluded from the pharmacopoeia for naturopathic doctors in BC. Homeopathy, which includes the use of substances such as lysinum, is a traditional modality with a long history and naturopathic scope of practice. It is still used by some naturopathic doctors today. Here's the thing. I think a good, why not use the scientific method and have a scientific approach to
this? That's why this is proliferates, because you have one case study, and a case study is not a study. It's you know, there's no proven benefit to anything until you've had controls and done a true study that had more. I mean, look at the craziness that happened with linking the MMR and autism because of the doctor in England. His name is escaping me. Who said there was a link between getting the MMR and autism. That was based on a study that had only 12 people in it.
Oh, that's right.
But yes, the press took it up, and it went viral and crazy. And then fucking Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Trump are still talking about it.
Yep.
You know, and that created a lot of trouble when it wasn't a properly, you know, case controlled study. You know, it was, you know, 12 people. You can't make any decisions based on that. And now you have studies, multiple studies done in multiple different countries that prove, you know, based on a group of, you know, 400,000 people, that there is no link, and yet this still continues. So it's really pretty funny what people hear what they want to hear.
Yeah.
To back up and back up what they want to be their thoughts.
Well, here's what I experienced in this kind of, I've talked to you about how we've joked about how I went to this clinic, which was run by a chiropractor, right? And she's helping people with their diabetes.
Right.
And I wasn't diabetic, but, and I think in my opinion that the same results could have been found from me visiting a nutritionist, that realistically, I think what I learned for me, and this is because I think I'm non-diabetic, and I do believe, because I've seen it, she's helped a lot of people. But what I'm kind of learning from this thing is that it becomes kind of a cool Uncle Lou syndrome, that there are certain tests, right, that she does that your physician would never do. But we learn from our physician the reasoning why they don't do those tests. Right.
Right. Exactly.
And when I went to my doctor and had my blood drawn, and I'd had my blood drawn from the nutritionist that I was going to, and the nutritionist blood sample had significantly higher levels of cholesterol than the one that was taken a week later. So I don't know how much your cholesterol can jump in a week. I'm sure it can jump pretty significantly, I guess. I don't know. But here's what
it all depends on what you ate the night before, really.
Right. So I went to my doctor and she said, well, you know, here's the thing. Do you want to look at statins? And I said, honestly, or no, I thought she was going to try and push statins on me. And she said, well, what has this person been giving you? What are you taking right now with them? And I said, niacin. They've been giving me niacin as a way to lower my cholesterol or whatever. And so she goes, I like it. She goes, it seems to be working. Your cholesterol's down. So she said, I can give you a prescription for niacin if you want. And I said, okay. She goes, after she got my blood results back and saw the latest results, she had her assistant call me and say, you know, hey, your numbers are down and blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, do I need to exercise more? Because it's still, my bad cholesterol is still pretty high. It's at 165 and it needs to be below 90. And she goes, well, let me check with the doctor, call you back. And the assistant calls me back and the doctor said, just keep doing what you're doing. It's working. And she believes that over time, everything will work itself out. But we'll have your blood work drawn again in 6 months. But she said, just keep doing exactly what you're doing, essentially eating more vegetables, less carbs, less sugar. And so my point is that the reason I tell that story is because when I went to my doctor and said, hey, and I asked her questions, she was on board. She was happy to answer any questions I had and actually was fine with me kind of saying, I would rather not take statins if I can avoid it because of my family's history and diabetes. Now, if she said that's horseshit, and you know, you got to get on these statins because you're in danger, then I think as a person, I could go get a second opinion if I feel that uncomfortable about it. Right. And if I talk to three different doctors, independent of each other, and those three doctors are saying the exact same thing, then that's got to mean something, right? But if I get, if only one of the doctors is saying something and two of the other doctors are saying something different, then that means that, you know, there's a gray area. Is that a fair assessment?
And a lot of times it's me as the primary care doctor that's got to, you know, break the tie sometimes. So, yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
And the same thing is happening with this whole hernia thing, because I'm going to get a mesh put in on my abdomen. And it's
don't
same,
you see the late night TV
exactly,
commercial?
Exactly. And so everybody tells me about, oh, you got to watch out for that. But see, you're making a joke.
Only if you're up after 11 p.m.
Yeah, you're making a joke because you're a doctor. But everybody that I talk to, because this is in the vein of what we're talking about, is that everybody I talk to is like, well, don't get that mesh thing. It'll mess you up. Haven't you seen that? And I had no clue. I had never heard of it.
I know nothing about it. I know from the commercials.
My dad. My dad said something. He goes, well, don't watch the news or whatever, like was his joke. He goes, they've had a lot of problems with that. I was like, and then with my dad, I even went, I go, wait, do I really have to worry about it? He goes, no, you're fine. And I did. I know you hate it, but I did do some Googling. But and basically what it was is that there were problems, but all of these problems were from people using in a vaginal wall. That's where the problem was coming
from.
You
don't have a vaginal wall, Justin.
Unless he's going to throw one in there with some mesh, I think I'll be fine. I don't know. And I might be on board. I don't know if I could just do a – I don't know. I'm not going to walk down that path, actually. I'm board to board. All right. You had one more article. Is that your phone? Do you need to jump and grab it?
I'm turning it off. Sorry.
You don't know. I don't care. It's fine. We're doing a podcast. It's not. We're not on CNN, Doc. Don't worry about it.
I told you the dog's locked out on the porch, too, because he was up my ass.
When I start paying you $500 to do an episode, then I can worry about the dog or the calls or anything. You do so much stuff for not only me, but also our listeners. So whatever you got to do, man, we don't care. We're happy to have you. So point is, you found this today, and it's some kind of new thing.
Yeah, it was in yesterday's paper. It came out yesterday, April 27, 2018. It does signal the end of mankind, I think. But the headline is Massachusetts preschool bans best friends, quote unquote. A Massachusetts preschool has banned children from using the term best friend. Parent Christine Hartwell says she learned about the ban from her 4-year-old daughter, who'd come home sad from her day at the preschool. When the Hartwells complained, school officials explained that best friend, even when used in a loving way, can lead other children to feel excluded.
Wow.
Yeah.
And here's, I think you and I are
no
going to
have more BFFs, buddy.
I think you and I are going to have a similar take on this, and that I read this book about German parenting and stuff, and how one of the things that they do in the Kitas, which is their preschools, about how they let the kids play on their own, and there's not a lot of adult, not necessarily supervision, but intervention. And the reasoning for that is that they want the kids to learn to work out their own problems, and that, in their opinion, if you do that, then it's like teaching a man to fish. Then there naturally are less problems. But we kind of live in a world of structured play. Like it's a big thing. In fact, I recently found out my kids, the school principal at my kid's school, also listened to the show, and she heard me talk about that. And she goes, I have some thoughts on this that I want to talk to you about. And so I'm stoked to hear her take on it, because here's what I can get. I can get that if I'm the person running the school, right, regardless of my own personal views, you gotta worry about kind of managing all of the temperaments of not only the teachers, but also the parents and the students themselves, right?
Right.
So from an infrastructure standpoint, I could get structured play, right? Everybody always plays the same game. It's always inclusionary. And the same thing, I could get my mind around the idea of saying, no, we don't use the word best friend because that's exclusionary to other people, and we want everybody to feel welcome and everything like that. But at a certain point, I can't help. And maybe it's because maybe this is you and I transitioning into that part of our lives where we're old men who are we get to get be described as being set in our ways, with air quotes. Is that I feel like when you do stuff like that, the unintended consequence is not only increased sensitivity, which is the opposite of what you're trying to fix. Right? It's like it accidentally upsets more people. Like you find that more people. The more and more we lean towards this, the more and more people are being diagnosed with, you know, high stress in high school and anxiety, depression, suicidal tendencies, all of that stuff. And also, it takes away anything being special or significant. It makes everything vanilla. Am I wrong on that? Do you think I'm misreading it?
No, I think you're right. It's just the bringing everybody to the same outcome. You know, it's really, you know, that the school didn't all of a sudden come to some conclusion that this was some kind of progressive thing to do. Somebody had a complaint.
Yes.
You know? So it's, again, a reaction to one person, an overreaction to one person's complaint, whose kid just simply went home and told her parents, I don't have any friends, and she's four, okay? I just the madness of this, everything we react to with such vigor now, and we overreact to everything. And I'm actually staring at the letter that was sent home to the parents, which I will send to you when we get off the phone.
Yeah, I'll post it on the Facebook page.
Oh, my freaking God. Oh, man. And there's, of course, a blog where people are posting their opinions about it, too. It's just hilarious.
It's just like
Hartwell has since decided to pull her child out of the preschool.
After they've done this, even. Like, that's the grit. That's after they made this change, that same person is still going to pull their kid out, so it's irrelevant.
No. The woman who got mad and started the blog, whose daughter came home upset, she just said, this is crazy, and pulled her kid out.
Oh, I see. Okay, she's the one who's saying, she's holding up the sign going, this is bullshit, and then in her blog post. I get it. Yeah, and it's funny because that's exactly why we chose the preschool that my kids went to, is because we talked to the director, and she now owns the place, and she's awesome. We text still. She sends me funny memes. She's a great lady, and she... She said to me, she was telling the story about how because Jacob was going to be new to school, he might think everything revolves around him, and had this story about a kid who was following another kid around. And the kid said, hey, stop following me. And the kid who was following was a new kid, and he didn't listen. And so the kid punched him. And so the parents want an apology letter from the other parents and all this stuff. And she goes, no, that's not what we do here. She said, we told the kids that you don't hit. And she said, but in the other kid's defense, he used his words. And your kid decided not to listen. So,
right?
You know, and she goes, I'm not endorsing that. I'm not condoning that behavior. But, you know, he did it the right way. And your kid just didn't listen. That's all that happened. And it's fine. And guess what? I bet that kid won't follow the kid anymore. It's all. Yep. And everybody's right. Fine.
There is a learning curve. So you got, and you, it is sometimes it's Lord of the Flies out there. But kids got to figure out how to interact with other kids, you know.
And sometimes,
As I learned it does require a fist to the jaw.
My curiosity is as I notice these pendulum, the more and more I read and research about parenting and like in the past and child development, stuff like that, is that and I'm sure that this reflects in other walks of life, is that there's a pendulum swing. So there's two extremes. We have the extreme of like helicopter parenting and then free range kids. And I feel like the pendulum swing is now starting to go back towards free range kids and how we kind of grew up. People are going to start pushing back about that kind of stuff. And I'd be curious to see if the consequence of that is that we talked about earlier about how I'm always so amazed at how empathetic everybody is in my kids' classrooms and how kind and appreciative everybody is. And what if that is the consequence of this kind of new age huggy feely touchy, you know, that, but I feel like there's got to be somewhere in the middle I think the reality is that what if these kids aren't as sensitive as they are, but it's the parents being hypersensitive? Because Natalie was the same way when Jacob started school. We go to a parent teacher conference where we're supposed to be talking about our kids' academic development. And she was like, does he have friends? Does he interact with the other kids? And I was like, why the fuck? I don't fucking care if he has friends in kindergarten. Like, I don't even remember people I went to kindergarten with.
That's right.
But I guess in her defense, she's worried about
reaction again.
Yeah, and she's worried about the social skills development, which I think is important. But I told her, I said, I just don't think you could be a kid who is A, around as many different adults and their kids as our kids are, and B, whose parents are as in love with each other and affectionate. Like, that just a natural consequence of that is the kid's going to have strong self-confidence and social skills. I don't see, because he's interacting with multiple different people and mom and dad are secure. Like, I really feel like that seems to be the recipe to that cake, but maybe I'm wrong.
And how do kids learn to negotiate around people that are different if everybody's beige?
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's a weird, weird situation there. And, I don't know.
Yeah, me neither.
Everything is an overreaction, I think, because everything makes it into the national media. So, you know, everybody has an opinion and you want to make it go away.
Yep.
I mean, look at what Starbucks is doing. I mean, it's a reaction, but it's an overreaction.
What are they doing? I don't know. I don't well, listen to the news.
I think
or
at the end of May, they're closing every Starbucks down for a day to give them sensitivity training for racial discrimination and stuff like that. It's a bold move, but you know, people need their fucking coffee.
And on that note, that will be our show. Check out Dr. J. Find out if he's coming to a city near you at standuppediatrician.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Dr. J. Soute. Also, do a search in the podcast because you are also on the David Feldman show there if you want to hear him talk about other topics and such. And always a pleasure, Dr. A. All of the social media handles are in the description of this episode. I highly suggest, if you haven't already, going to the Dad Podcast Instagram or Facebook.com/Dad Podcast. I'm starting to share my segments on Gary and Shannon, where you can listen to the links on that. I did an interesting topic. And what I do is I research these things. And because there's a lot of crossover listeners, I try to have new content here as well. But every once in a while, I pull some of those segments, especially if I'm doing a solo episode or something, and I'll share them with you. But I did an interesting thing where, like I said earlier, free range parenting is on the rise. State of Utah just passed legislation making it basically saying that if your kid is walking to and from school or you let your kid go to a park, as long as the kid has your permission, you can't be arrested for that in the state of Utah. And that was just signed into legislation about a month ago. So,
and they have multiple wives there.
Exactly. They know what they're doing. And so you can also follow the Dumb Dad Project, which is me building that fort in my kid's backyard. I think I'm going to try and get some walls started, at least. It might go a little bit slower here. There's a first floor, a second floor, rock climbing wall, and what is supposed to be like a wall that they could shoot their Nerf guns through and stuff. That's all up there. And
send me a link. I want to see that.
All right, I will do that. So again, standuppediatrician.com, at Dr. J. Soute on the Twitter for our fantastic resident pediatrician here on the Dad Podcast. On behalf of Dr. J. Soute, this is Justin Worsham saying, hug your kids, hump your loved one, and stay frosty, my friends.